20 plus of us gave him hell. Did he care? I doubt it, but it felt good. And I'm proud to say that lady who you just heard, Christy Nelson, she is now a member of RAP.
Ed Bish, founder of RAP, Relatives Against Purdue Pharma. He formed the group after his 18-year-old son, Eddie, died of an OxyContin-related overdose in 2001. Thanks also to investigative reporter Christopher Glazik, who spoke to us from Mexico City in 2017. He wrote a piece for Esquire, headlined, The Secret of Family Making Billions from the Opioid Crisis. To see part one of our discussion, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations of programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Program Advisory Committee meets quarterly on the first Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Tonight at 7 o'clock, join us for a conversation about It Did Happen Here, the book, the podcast, and their upcoming event tomorrow, Tuesday, June 6th at 7 p.m., at Powell's City of Books here in Portland. Only on KBOO 90.7 FM and always available on kboo.fm.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO FM on this Monday, the 5th of June, 2023. And this is More Talk Radio. I am Cecil Prescott.
I love that dramatic pose, man. I thought for a minute now, I know he knows who he is, so what's up? What's up? I don't have a dramatic pose. I'm just going to launch into it and say, good morning, everyone. I'm Celeste Carey. I am his intrepid co-host, and welcome to a bright sunny day. I had a bell. Did you hear that lovely little sound effect?
I looked at my phone. I didn't know what it was.
I guess it might have been my watch or my phone, but I better put my phaser on stun here.
Yeah, let me do that.
Yeah. All righty. So, yes, we have a couple of good topics today. And as well, we want to preload, give you the phone number so you can participate. So the phone number to join in the conversation is 503-231-8187. And do you want to lead off with your topic?
Okay, I'll just introduce what I have to say. And in November of 2022, the voters of Portland voted to do a radical surgery in the way our government operates in terms of implementing a new plan after 110 years in terms of city government, which briefly will eliminate the current city government, will increase the membership in the city council. It would it would also include rank voting, and all of this is coming down right now. And I'm wondering how well people are aware or engage in the in either the draft district plan, which is now available in terms of how the city will be divided in terms of districts, and whether or not they have reviewed the draft maps. There are three potential maps in terms of how the city will be divided for city council, and whether or not you and to encourage people to participate in the hearings that will take place during July. Also, you know, other things are happening related to this in terms of expansion of the city council. There's a commission that's also looking at the salary of the new city council members, as well as education in terms of what it means to participate in rank voting and how that will impact and change us. And I, you know, as we slowly move into this new era, I felt like as I, and this is leaning into maybe what you wanted to raise, Celeste, mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to listen to some of the city council hearings last week, and I said, well, you know, I was frustrated, and I said, well, just hold your breath, Cecil, and in a few months, we will be able to do things differently, and we won't have, you know, a bunch of middle-aged cisgender men making decisions for the whole city. But are we prepared for it? I don't know.
Well, you know, okay, I'm just going to let the cynic in me, I'm not going to say pessimist, I'm going to say cynic in me come out here for a moment. I really question how this demographic shift is actually going to be manifested. You know, we can say anything we want, but power always finds a way to exalt itself, you know, and to kind of slow down other people being involved in it and being able to participate. And so I'm really questioning, because, you know, we're not the first organization, we're not the first municipality or government or corporation or whatever to say, I'm going to open up the doors and we're going to have a new day. I mean, it power just does not concede. And so I'm sitting here with, I'm skeptical. I would like to be wrong. Yeah. There is no value in me being right at all.
Well, you know, one thing is related. You know, I mentioned we've had this commission form of government for 110 years. And it's not as if we've hadn't talked about it. The city mm-hmm. hasn't talked about this over the years. And time after time, you know, every 10 years we have to we have to review the way the city government works. And over, you know, the past century, 8 times Portland voters have decided not to change the form of government. And that might reflect how power continues to hold on.
Mm-hmm.
This last time when they did this radical change in city government, it is interesting to see how power will seek to maintain control, and we'll see. You know, ranked voting, expansion to 12 members in the city council. It could be something radical, or as you suggest, it might be interesting just to see how those in power maintain their power.
Well, you know, we talk about balance and control and expansion. And I think that plays in nicely as a segue for the point I want. We kind of both came up with dueling topics today, but, you know, Carl, talk to us about one of them. My concerns have to do with the lack of cogent control and planning and vision with the efforts of the City of Portland and Multnomah County with regard to issues of homelessness. Now, most recently, there was a very contentious hearing where Mayor Wheeler faced a lot of concerned residents here in Portland, complaining of either the problems with having unhoused people in the community without resources to help them address the various challenges, and then those who want some place for people to be able to rest during the day. And all of this is was in preparation for the camping ban. And every city in the state is going to have to address it, because Oregon did pass a ruling some time ago that says that it has to be addressed. And we've had a lot of counts to determine just how many people are facing this challenge, as well as what are some of the needs, you know, because you can't help a person if you don't help them according to what they need, not what you think they need. But anyway, that whole issue of whether or not people can rest in certain places during the day and where they're going to go at night has a lot of polarized elements to it. And so I thought it would be interesting for us to just kind of talk about it a little bit today, regardless of what side you fall in, and especially if you have solutions. And then, of course, I'm going to encourage you to send those solutions to City Council, you know, in writing, if you don't want to sit there and wait and argue.
Indeed. Yeah, because yes. Oh, well. Yeah, send your letters, and you don't want to wait and argue. And I'm wondering, Celeste, as you brought up this topic and talk about the way, you know, it's contentious, say something about there's not only contentious among elements of people living in the city, but there's also some tension between the Multnomah County and Portland City government. Do you
want to check? Yeah, and I'll do that briefly. Let me give the phone number to give people a chance, because this is kind of dense. And here on your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge, along the Willamette River Valley, 104.3, and everywhere it is. www.kboo.fm. Okay, that, then the phone number, 231-8187. There we go. And that's what triggers it, that 8187.
You are smarter than I am. You remember it. I just have it written in front of me.
Well, no, see, we both got our talents. Now, you are a policy wonk and a history wonk. I don't care. That's why I don't remember certain things. You know, whereas there's other things like, you know, community trends and phone numbers and other things I got the brain for. That's my nerdism. Okay. So anyway, to get back to some of the contention, one of the biggest challenges, I think, and there was two articles that came across my feed, and one of them was covered by KOIN. Yes. and you can find it online here, and this is where Commissioner Multnomah County Commissioner Sharon Myron was discussing the fact that there is no collaborative, comprehensive, cogent, clear plan on homelessness here in the metro area.
And you know, Celeste, when mm-hmm. I watched that, I was stunned, because I just assumed there was a cogent plan, because there isn't it called the Joint Office?
Well, it's joint, only in that we give the money, so money is in one hand, but lack of control is in the other hand of the city. As far as the county, control is in their hand, and then they put out the hand for some money. You know, and I'm not saying that there aren't some helpful actions and efforts that have come out of that, but here's the problem. It is literally like the chickens running around. There's nothing coherent. There's nothing that speaks to collaboration and accountability. Mm-hmm. And actually, again, looking at what a person needs. Now, when I was in nursing, one of the biggest tools we had that, you know, it still stands by me is creating a care plan. Mm-hmm. You look at what the person needs. You look at their whole scope of needs, not just the physical needs that have brought them to a medical facility, but, you know, you're looking at their nutritional, the spiritual, the social needs, everything, and then you're looking at what you're equipped to do, and then you do that, and you work with the patient, the person, you know, the soul before you to kind of come up with, you know, a collaborative effort. Okay, we all, you included, going to work together on this. Yes. We're not doing that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to be so progressive and to consider itself such an intellectually stimulated entity, you think the city of Portland would do a little better. Well, wow. Okay, I wouldn't. No, okay, I'm not going to be that hard on Portland, but I'm just saying, you know, the evidence speaks for itself.
Yes, it does. So share some of your thoughts and your insights. Our number again is 503-231-8187, and talk about your thoughts about what's happening in our county in terms of addressing houselessness, the coordination or lack thereof between the city and the council, the city and the county. And also, you might want to give some feedback about the changes in this Portland City Council and whether or not you have been following and whether or not you have a preference of the there's three maps, district maps, suggested maps, and what do you think all about it? Let's go to those who are waiting to be involved in our conversation.
Good morning, Santiago.
Good morning.
What is this?
You know, the biggest problem I see in the issues that we're having is that, unlike a lot of other places in the world, like, we still moralize homelessness. I mean, you could put it up there with drug addiction. We still moralize drug addiction. It's seen mm-hmm. as, you know, it's seen as like a personal moral failing rather than a socioeconomic problem. You know, drug addiction in much the same way. It's both, you know, it's a mental health issue, but it's also socioeconomic because, like, you know, the people who are dying are on the poor side of the scale, really. I mean, you got rich folks who are addicted too, but they have the resources to take care of themselves, whereas like poor folks don't. But I digress. You know, and the other part of it is too, is that, like, you know, the rampant homelessness in downtown Portland only exists on the back. You know, it's because the West Hills exist. It's because Lake Oswego exists. It's a concentration of wealth. The fact that the poorest folks are the ones who get levied with these taxes, and not that there's anything necessarily wrong with taxes. You know, we should all be, you know, outside of a socialist system where we're mandated to, you know, to pitch in all of our resources. We should be paying taxes because, you know, it's about like taking care of your fellow man, and studies have shown that, you know, prevention is far more productive than treatment. You know what I'm saying? We should be preventing this. But the point is that, like, we don't tax these businesses heavily enough, and these businesses, you know, they rely on threatening people with capital flight, you know, and things like that to, like, you know, well, if you tax me, we're going to pull the money out of the city. But the truth of the matter is that, like, and the thing is, like, Democrats and Republicans, you know, the most of our elected officials are on the same side as the money because they have to be, they have to get those big donors in order to participate. So, mm-hmm. I mean, like, we need to, I mean, as people, you know, as people who are just regular folks who aren't politicians, it's recognizing that, excuse me, every economic study has shown that all of us are one emergency room visit, one $500 emergency away from living in a tent. You know, we need to have, it's like we need radical empathy, really. I mean, like, you know, we don't have enough of it. The people who were leading the, you know, I think Paul Rowland had some homeless advocates on last week, you know, and they were telling the truth when they said, you know, there's only been like one story in like the last like 10 or so years that didn't focus on homelessness, that didn't focus squarely on the trash issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where, you know, we had, you know, it's like, you know, they talk about homeless people as if like they're not real people. They're just, you know, like they're just animals, you know.
So how do you suggest we alter that conversation or change the dynamic so we might be able to address some of the issues that you are raising so that it's more than just those talking points?
Well, and, you know, coming back to the ranked choice voting, that's gonna, I mean, people have a problem with that because, you know, because then, you know, because it's like, oh, well, you know, there's not many viable parties. Well, the reason why there's no viable parties is because the corporate duopoly has so much control over the narrative. Now, granted, we might not be able to get somebody who isn't a Democrat or Republican in even with ranked choice voting, but the difference is that we'll actually be able to hear multiple perspectives on issues, and that's what we're missing. Mm-hmm. The narrative, both on the corporate side, both Democrats and Republicans, about homelessness is that it is a moral failing. If we can talk to them and help them to understand this isn't a moral failing, this is a socioeconomic issue driven by wealth inequality and unequal consumption, then we can start finding ways to change the narrative. But as long as we've got people telling us that, you know, as long as the people who have the money are telling us that these are subhuman people, subhuman creatures who are just taking up space on our sidewalks with their dirty, unwashed selves, we're never going to have the true collaborative issue that Celeste is talking about. Because that's another thing. If all of us understand we're one emergency away from living in a tent, then we have a much greater sense of urgency to work together to solve this issue.
And I think a lot of what you're saying I agree with, and I would only add and saying that it is indeed a moral issue, and it is a moral issue as you have outlined it, that our moral outrage should not be on the individuals who are forced to live on the streets, but on our immoral system, which creates
society. Now, I'll agree with that on it being an immoral issue in the sense that, like, it is immoral for people to have so much money and to do so little with it to help sustain the community that props them up. Because these cats, these entrepreneurs, they live by the neoliberal idea of, you know, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. You know, it's like, but no man is an island. No person exists without the community that props them up. So in that way, it is definitely a moral failing. But in the general sense of material conditions where you don't have to bring, you know, and that's the thing, like, you know, morals are metaphysical. So it's like working within the material conditions. You know, just look at the numbers of how the economy is stacked under neoliberalism.
Certainly.
I mean, it's no coincidence that, you know, Reagan 40 years ago gutting social spending programs.
That is,
you know,
true. Well, Santiago, we're going to let you go so we can get somebody else's opinion. We want to thank you for priming the pump for us and laying out a lot of the issues that we have to look for. Thank you for your call.
Absolutely.
And you are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city. This is More Talk Radio. Cecil Prescott and myself, Celeste, and we're holding sway. We want to get your input now with regard to my particular topic. One of the things I want to talk about is how do we even start the conversation honestly about the dueling impacts of this challenge we're dealing with of homelessness, and how people need a place that they can rest and relax and recover so that they can re-enter a feeling and a sense of accomplishment of being productive in the community, but not overrun folks, because it's no secret. I used to work for the city. I worked for them for a long time in public safety. And one of the things that you see is as Santiago put it, the effects of the immorality of pushing people like herds into untenable situations where they sometimes lose the ability to feel like a human being and respond responsibly like a human being. You have people who are horrified that they have to live in a gully somewhere, mm-hmm. and have no resources and no facilities. And yet you also have the flip side of people who live in their houses who are not rich, you know, mm-hmm. and they have folks violating in their space and taking their belongings and threatening them, and that's an untenable situation too. But we need to have a space where everybody feels safe to start talking about that and come up with solutions instead of just pointing fingers at the problem.
Exactly. And that's part of the challenge. I think we're very good at pointing fingers. We're less successful in successful collaboration. It's much more difficult, but it's something that's necessary that we have to do. What are your thoughts? Our numbers here are 503-231-8187 in terms of solutions, in terms of houselessness. And it occurs to me that this weekend I saw a couple of features on local TV media celebrating this new luxury hotel that is opening up in downtown Portland, and how, you know, it's so magnificent. And it's not only a hotel, there'll be some condos, you know, at the very top, you know, that people will buy for millions and millions of dollars. And so it's the best of times, it's the worst of times.
Well, 503-231-8187 will get you time on the air to discuss your perspective. And you can choose from either topic. We want to kind of limit the conversation so we can get folks. But, you know, this is the time to call, because you would be the first one on the air. And we typically get a long list of people right at the end that want to call. So I'm encouraging you, if you're even the least bit encouraged or interested in calling, call now. So let's talk about which is it, the cart or the horse, that the governance reorganization is. I mean, if we get a better organized city governance system, do you think we would be able to do better in addressing our needs for our homeless residents here in Portland?
Well, you know, as we talk about, and it's a multitude of issues and problems that are all mm-hmm. interrelated.
Yeah.
But I think one of the challenges that people have talked about is that our present form of government, which we've operated with over 100 years, is ineffective. Mm-hmm. I think everyone, we're not doing what we ought to do, and that change ought to be made. And, you know, that's from the philosophical in terms of whether elected officials should be in charge of bureaus or not, whether we need the change in a city government will dictate increase people participating, elected officials in city government, but will also create opportunities for ways in which to engage. Mm-hmm. And the hope is, for me, is that with the increased number and diversity of members and voices, that we will create a more equal society, but one in which more voices are heard and be able to participate. Let's go to our next caller and hear what April has to say. Good morning, April.
Good morning.
Hi. Hi, Cecil and Celeste. I have mainly a question. I'm very excited about the changes we voted for, but I do agree there is a lack of preparation on the citizens' part. However, I also know that I personally don't have a computer, and I think that's true for, like, you know, over 10% of Portland. And so I don't know where the maps are that you alluded to at the start of the show. I don't have any information about that, and I think that's a huge oversight. Uh-huh. And I'm wondering where I could get information about that.
Excellent point.
So Cecil, where did you find the maps so we can tell people how to look for them? And I'm also trying to pull them up real quick myself right now.
Okay, but, you know, April mentioned that she doesn't have a computer.
No, I have a point. I'm going somewhere with this.
And so it's, you know, briefly, I think. You know, go to citycouncilportland.gov. Yeah. Willamette Week, Ray tells, had it, and other, it's been covered by various media. So go to portland.gov, transition, and you'll see a lot around the government.
Okay, now here's the thing. And April, your voice sounds familiar, and you don't have to give me your whole name, but we've worked together, haven't we?
Yes, we have. We were both on the city board together.
Yeah, we worked on the Budget Advisory Committee.
Yes.
Now, I know this is not a perfect solution, but don't forget your libraries. People who do not have computers, don't forget your libraries. And a lot of them are trying to expand the opportunities for people to connect and get online and get information. And don't forget there's the Oregonian. I know some people will boo and hiss at me for saying that, you know, but it is a resource. Now, the other thing is the phone number 503-823-4000 is to City County Information Referral. And you can request, you can ask them, would they please send you a copy? Sometimes there is a charge for this. And so you might be better off going to the library and being in line, because right now to print limited amounts is free. So that's something you can consider so you can see the map. But I do have compassion and concern for those who can't readily pull up this information, because like you said, April, that makes them disenfranchised. You know, you can't substantively cooperate and participate.
Well, I had thought of calling the city number, because I do call that number really often since I don't have a computer. But I also wondered how, I mean, I'm sure they would send me the information if I asked for it, but I wondered how forthcoming they would be, because this new plan is basically disenfranchising the old guard who've been on the city council.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really wonder if the city's the best place to get
try
information.
I would say try, because right now we know this is a resource that we have. And I'm not saying that they're perfect by any means. You know, I'm both in love with and can't stand the city of Portland.
So let me also suggest to people, you can call the city and to get a copy of the draft district plan. Call 311 to share your comments. If you have an email, you may email your comment to districtcommission@portlandoregon.gov, or the old-fashioned way, mail comments to the Office of Management and Finance, Independent District Commission, at City Hall, 1120 Southwest 5th Avenue, room 901. Oh, that's not City Hall, but
okay,
lots of information. You. And public hearings will take place in July. So you can find information there and participate in the public hearings.
Well, that's good to know. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for your call and reminding us have alternate forms of access available.
Yeah. That's awesome. Thank you. Have mm-hmm. a great day.
You too. Bye. You know, that's one thing that whatever plan comes out of this venture, there needs to be some serious thought about community access. I sit on bodies before, both county, city, and state. And a big challenge is making sure you get a broad input from folks, but yet we have this little tiny opening for public access. And it's no wonder that sometimes they get really rancorous, because people get upset that it's not made easier for them to be able to drop in, give their informed, you know, opinion, and then bounce out. You know, and it's no secret that a lot of times this is done on purpose. Yes. This is how you govern the unwashed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's sad. But okay, so I'm sitting up here chuckling, and I'm gonna tell y'all, I'm gonna let you in on a secret. Any other time we got something on here, you can tell when it's sexy, because people be falling over themselves. What's so unsexy about talking about homelessness, honestly? I just posing the question, you know. And it's not to jab anybody, but to try to get to whatever the obstacles are to communicating, you know, to connecting. Because this is something that's near and dear to my heart. This is one of the things that I care a lot about. And when I have money to give, this is one of the places it goes, is organizations that I see dealing with the issue of homelessness in a substantive fashion. But, you know, governance should do it. And the city of Portland and Multnomah County have a unique relationship, because generally, this is not, what is it you call it? Human welfare needs generally are handled by the counties.
Yes.
You know, especially when it comes to health and welfare and well-being. And so that the city was willing to shell out, and I've seen both $43 million and $46 million as the amount. That says a lot, especially when we got other issues that we're supposed to be tackling and we're not doing them well either. $43 million could do a lot for this city. However, it's going to an organization that only just recently hired a director who's supposed to be a relationship builder. And so we have an organization that has no oversight from the county chair. The county chair has kind of been dragging her feet and making sure that it's effective and working. And it's not something that the new director should come up with out of a vacuum. You know, this should be something that we solicit input from the medical community, you know, the development and housing community, from neighbors, everyone.
So, point of clarification, you mentioned a new director. The new director of what, and that relationship with the county and to the city?
Okay, the Joint Office of Homeless Services Director.
Mm-hmm.
And I know his last name is Field. Here, just give me a moment here, because my brain is leaking, and I'm going to get my notes. Now, Multnomah County Chair Jessica Peterson appointed Dan Field. That's, yes, okay. I got the first name. I did remember the last name correctly. And this person used to be a Kaiser Permanente executive. And so it's my understanding he's going to be named the director of the joint office. Okay. However, there is no overarching plan. Now, some years
and
ago...
And who develops the plan, the office or the county or the city?
Well, see, that's the thing. That is the thing. You're hitting the rub there. Now, according to Multnomah County Commissioner Myeran, there is no plan.
Right.
And if you've read her article and then her op-ed, both that were featured by a coin, then you would read that she said, I actually came up with a plan myself, but it should not be passed down from the county chair, Peterson, to Dan Field. and say, Dan, make me a plan. There should be some outline, some framework that has been developed of all this information that's been coming in to Multnomah County, and maybe even some listening to what the city of Portland has to say when we've been giving them money, to say this is what we're going to do. Now, as I said, and the article, and let me reference it specifically, let me get back to the top of it here. This was an opinion article. Let's see, who is this? The Oregonian. Opinion, an opportunity for a reset of homeless strategy in Multnomah County, published April 23rd, 2023. And it ended this, Commissioner Myran, who is a physician, and so should have some insight, said that I've got, you know, some points that need to be included. Okay, that's the care plan. And she named some steps, like establish a single governing body, create a representative and effective oversight structure, coordinate data across the municipalities, you know, as some of the steps we can take. So, you know, we need more than this, because we're paying these people to lead. And lead sometimes means getting off your high horse and sitting down at a table and making a plan. 503-231-8187. Join us in our conversation about the new plan for Portland city governance, or just to discuss how we can start having an illuminating conversation about the effects of homelessness on both people who are living in brick and mortar structures as well as those who don't, and how their needs and interests intersect. We've got Martin on the line. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Hi. I have a question. I believe Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, the City Council is going to hold a vote on yes or no on camping ban from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. for the homeless tent people. And I was wondering if there is going to be a demonstration in front of the City Hall because of this.
Are you asking about an organized demonstration, if we're aware of any?
Yeah, I intend to be there, but I was just wondering if anybody else is going to show up. If there's going to be, if there's actually going to be some a demonstration against this.
Well, this is Portland.
Really draconian ability for people to exist without shelter.
Well, I'm going to assume. I mean, nobody's written me and said, Celeste, we're going to be protesting Cecil, you know, or Kabu. You know, I'm not saying that there isn't, and I'm not saying, you know, I actually, what I'm saying is I would expect there probably is. Like Cecil said, this is Portland. But, you know, for me, I want to address something, though. You said something interesting, and this is what I'm trying to diffuse. You used the word draconian, and depending on where you are personally, I can see why you would use that. But I'm thinking we need to consider the fact that there are damages being done to people who live in these neighborhoods as well as to the folks who are unhoused. And how can we sit down and have an open, honest conversation that leads to a solution without necessarily polarizing ourselves? Because you're right, the draconian, but when you say that word, it makes it sound as if the people who are facing challenges and being harmed and having stuff stolen from them and having their well-being threatened by individuals who are living in the community, like they're wrong. And it's like both sides are being wronged. So how do we sit down and work together to come up with a workable solution?
Well, I think that it's kind of a stereotype to brand all homeless people as being unlawful or criminal or any of that.
Well, I'm not. I'm not. I've worked in public safety. I do not do that.
Yeah, well, I think everybody has to realize that I have no statistics to prove this, but I believe that the majority of people that are on the street now are there because the rents are too high. Now, I know some of them are drug addicts, and I know some of them have mental problems. But I think if the rents were lower, they could have a chance to make a better life for themselves. And I just believe the rents are too high for so many people in this city.
Okay, well, that is most definitely a concern that it's obvious. I mean, if a squalid place with no running water and lots of broken, fixtures can go for $1,500 a month, and I know that's true because not only have I've seen some of them, but I've read the articles and I've read the testimonials and everything from Street Roots to the New York Times. It's true, but that's not the single thing, and that's what I want us to sit down and honestly discuss is look at this. But also, here's the thing about rent. If a person lives in a modest, say, duplex, and it's what someone who worked really hard and was lucky and got themselves a job where they were making maybe back in 1980, $18, $19, $20 an hour, and they worked hard and they bought this property and they're counting on it for their retirement, they're not in the same category or classification as somebody who owns, say, a big apartment complex and is charging $2,000 a month for 400 square feet. And so we want to make sure that we have some nuance in all of this. And that's what I'm concerned about. I'm not hearing enough awareness of the nuance in this situation. But go ahead real quickly, and then we got another call.
I don't know what the solution to the problem is.
But one of them is rent.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me?
One of them is rent.
Well, people are being priced out of housing all over this country at
this
time.
Yes, that's true.
And it's not right. I don't know if I guess maybe one of the solutions is subsidized housing. I live in subsidized housing.
Mm-hmm.
And if I didn't have this subsidized housing, I'm 80 years old, I would be on the street.
Right.
So, and I'm sure there's, all the people that live in this building that I live in will probably be on the street too, unless they had a relative to go to go to and live with or something else. It's just too many people are being affected by this, high rent.
That's true. Well, we've heard that. We want to thank you so much for reminding us that we need to look at this from a multiple perspective. And thanks for your call.
Oh, could I?
Well, I've got two other calls behind you.
Anybody out there has any information about the demonstration?
A demonstration. Yeah. Okay. I'm sure they'll call in. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. And we'll go to our next caller. Good morning, Harry.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I'm really excited about a change in city government because the old system just kept it down. Not things weren't getting done, and also the real estate and property industry seems to have controlled our city. And I really worry about, example. We had a new budget in the city. It was like $7 billion. Okay, why Portland is so livable, we have a small tax rate, is because $2 billion the city gets from the Water Bureau. The Water Bureau sells water to all other communities, and they make $2 billion. That's $2 billion of taxes we don't have to pay. And a lot of people are looking at that in industry, looking at, taking over our water department, and they will. And in the past, it was used as a slush fund. So that stuff won't be used. And another thing is the housing you were talking about, a lot of this subsidized housing, the city really doesn't own. They have a contract with contractors that they will build this building. You own the property, and after 20, 25 years, it reverts to you. And they usually knock it down and put whatever they want to on it. The city of Portland has City Center Concern. They own buildings, but you know, so we have the capacity and the know-how of owning buildings, and the city does. But they're not. They're giving it to other contractors, and it's kind of a waste of money. A couple months ago, our governor says, okay, City of Portland and Multnomah County, we have $250 million we would like to give you for your homeless, but you have to give us a plan. There was no plan. So it's like...
So how does this, you know, I got to cut to the chase because I got two people behind
you. Okay, good.
Uh-huh. So how does this... bear with the change in governance, which is what you let in with.
The change in government, it'll never get done. Now, all these things that the our present form of government can't really do. With all these new commissioners, they can expand and put new ideas out and everything else, but where the other, our commissioner system right now is controlled by the real estate industry and a few other things like that, and you know, so I was that's why I'm glad we're getting that. You know,
well, let's see how it works, and be down there and make sure you speak to it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, you too. Bye bye. And we'll go to Mitch. Good morning.
Good morning. I haven't called in years because even before the pandemic, I was pointing to. Your call, Celeste, for nuance in the discussions on plans for dealing with the homeless, and we can't get past the point of even referencing the people who have made careers out of building just such plans. So that when you talk about Dr. Mehran now being at the head of the Multnomah County Board, she's among the few elected officials, and she was an emergency room doctor, so you're right, she might have some insights here in terms of the need out there. She is aware of Housing First programs mm-hmm. that have been tried and that are not working in any miraculous way to solve the problems that Harry just mentioned. The real obstruction is coming from all those people who are profiting or think that they are profiting from keeping property values so inflated. And we never source. You're calling for nuance. I've been trying to screen as a fundraiser for either KABU or any organization that wants to seriously try a Housing First program that has worked in various cities, but they're isolated cities. And yet, if you go online, type in Housing First programs, you will find that there are universities in Canada, in the United States, that do nothing but study the cost-benefit analysis of Housing First programs. They're nothing new. The first Housing First program in the United States occurred during the Great Depression in Maine. It's called Preble House in the state of Maine. And I'm sorry for your one caller who won't get even free computers that she could have at home and look online, or she won't go to a library. But anybody,
well, let's not say that she won't.
I don't have mm-hmm. a smartphone, right? But I have a 15-year-old computer I got for free from a former employer, mm-hmm. and people are saying update it. But I can go online still, mm-hmm. type in Preble House or Housing First, and be led to academics who do not have a voice in
in sharing what can we do? Because
I got somebody behind you. So what can we do, given the fact that there are people who are doing this? How can we bridge that gap?
Well, the first thing you can do is, if you can go online, just type in on YouTube. It's free. This excerpt, it's a 20-minute excerpt from a Swedish documentary in the English language called Push.
Yes, I think you and I may have talked a long time ago about Push.
But nobody wants to screen it. I've gone to nonprofit groups and even little theaters now nonprofit groups won't screen this movie as a benefit.
Okay,
because
it
would do is it would bring the nuance you're calling for to the discussion.
Right. But what we need is rather than have people watch the movie in screenings, if you can go to YouTube, go watch it yourself and then bring that knowledge to the meetings here. Because screening it is just one step, it's a good step, but it's not only one step. And
you're looking for nuance, Celeste. What has prevented you from calling Saskia Sassen at Columbia, who's responded to my emails and is willing to come and be on a panel? What has prevented you from getting people on the air who've been studying Housing First programs to discuss them?
Nothing, and I've had people discuss them. But here's
Housing
my point.
First programs? I've never heard the term on KABU.
But here's the thing. I can either bring these people and have them discuss it, or I can encourage people to get the knowledge themselves and take their activism up a notch.
Fine, but I don't see you doing either.
I'm doing that now. You and I are having that very discussion.
But we can't go to the next step, which is bring the people who have made careers for decades
but why is that the
we're not allowed to discuss.
Why is
Sharon
that the
Mehron knows about Housing First.
Okay,
what prevents you from calling her?
What prevents
and
what prevents
and
you
her brain for
what,
her knowledge on Housing First and
what,
where it
what,
is
what prevents you from doing this?
I don't have the megaphone you have.
Okay, but you're talking right now on the air. So you
and I'm outreaching, but there is this taboo to discuss the programs
I have no taboo.
Because people are afraid
of
property values coming down.
I
and
appreciate
like
all
said,
that, but I need you to listen before I have to cut you off. It's 8:56. I got one more person on the line.
Okay.
You have had a chance. You said push. I think it's an excellent idea. I think you need to really get, because I can only do so many things. I'm on like two bodies right now. And one of them, you know, it has to do with public safety. So get out there, do the push. I think it's an admirable plan, but this is your baby.
I've been reaching out. I'm just getting nowhere.
Don't stop. Okay, email
doors.
Me. Email me, and we'll figure out something.
I have. You've never answered.
I have not gotten an email that says your name. Okay. Anyway, you can always get to us through our webpage on the KBOO.FM website. Let me get to my next caller because I only got about a minute. Hi, Shay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just, I don't have a solution to offer like you mentioned, but I just want to remind everybody that keeping the poor fighting amongst ourselves is an act of class warfare.
Yes, it is.
As long as we feed into those narratives where we are fighting amongst each other instead of realizing that the rent is too high and the wages are too low and the people who are in precarious positions are fighting with the people who are in destitute poverty, you know, we're not focusing our attention on the people who are keeping us all down. So, you know, I don't have a solution to offer except that we work to raise each other's consciousness and recognize who the real oppressors are and organize for a more equitable living situation for everybody. You know, the rents can't be this high and the wages can't be this low. If it continues, it's just going to be more and more. And I'm afraid, you know, that it is profitable for the city to sustain this problem, and it legitimizes increased policing. It legitimizes increased surveillance. And again, it keeps the poor people fighting amongst ourselves. And so you know, as long as it is beneficial to the rich people who have money invested in this city and who have great influence on, you know, the government or whatever, it's not in their interest to actually get people into better situations. So that's all I have to say.
Well, thank you for reminding us of that. Thank you, Shay.
Thank you.
So you too. You have a good day. So I want to say this because I only have a few minutes left. Go to www.pushthefilm, that's one word, PUSHTHEFILM.com, and watch the video. And then take that information and put it in your comments to City Council and to Multnomah County. And be the megaphone that our last caller asked for. This has been More Talk Radio on your community connection and megaphone, KBOO. Stay tuned. We have the Old Mo Variety Hour coming up immediately.
Thanks for listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and all over the world at kbu.fm.
Tune in to Cubby Cushy, Cubby Cush, Tuesday nights on KBOO. 2 hours of global bass with an emphasis on South Asia and the South Asian diaspora, and an even more special emphasis on the Punjabi diaspora. Hosted every Tuesday, 10 to midnight, by The Incredible Kid. This ain't world music, it's birth of a new world music.
KBOO Community Radio is now on Venmo. Follow us.